Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sakyayasya sakyam purusho vaiti sakyu. Sabhavasam savasita puresvin. Guno yata gunino vyakta drishte. Tasmai maheshaya namaskaromi. Sakyam purusho vaiti sakyu. Sakhavasam samvasata puresmin. Guno yata gunino vyakta drishte. Tasmai maheshaya namaskaroni. Translation. As the sense objects, form, taste, touch, smell, and sound, cannot understand how the senses perceive them, so the conditioned soul, although residing in his body along with the super soul, cannot understand how the supreme spiritual person, the master of the material creation, directs his senses. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that supreme person who is the supreme creator. The individual soul and the supreme soul live together within the body. This is confirmed in the Upanishads by the analogy, the two friendly birds live in one tree. One bird eating the fruit of the tree and the other simply witnessing and directing. Although the individual living being, who is compared to the bird that is eating, is sitting with his friend, the supreme soul, the individual living being cannot see him. Actually, the super soul is directing the workings of his senses in the enjoyment of sense objects. But as these sense objects cannot see the senses, the conditioned soul cannot see the directing soul. The conditioned soul has desires, and the supreme soul fulfills them. But the conditioned soul is unable to see the supreme soul. Thus, Prajapati Daksha offers his obeisances to the supreme soul, the super soul, even though unable to see him. Another example given is that although ordinary citizens work under the direction of the government, they cannot understand how they are being governed or what the government is. In this regard, Madhavacharya quotes the following verse in the Skanda Purana. Uparagya viyapvamtu vritya vedena chatmana kutajivo nayat sakyam nadehi tasmai namastite. As the various servants in different departments of big establishments cannot see the supreme managing director under whom they are working, the conditioned souls cannot see the supreme friend sitting within their bodies. Let us therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto the supreme, who is invisible to our material eyes.
বিষয় অঙ্গীকার যেগুলিকে পরিচালিত করে, কিন্তু ইন্দ্রিয়ের বিষয়গুলি যেমন ইন্দ্রিয়গুলিকে ধরতে পায় না, তেমন বদ্ধজীব সেই পরিচালক পরমাত্মাকে ধরতে পায় না। বদ্ধজীবের ঘোষণা রয়েছে আর পরমাত্মা তার সেই ঘোষণাগুলিকে পরিচালনা করেন, কিন্তু বদ্ধজীব পরমাত্মাকে ধরতে পায় না। তাই প্রজাপতি দক্ষ সেই পরমাত্মাকে দেখতে না পেলেও তাকে তার পুনরুক্তি নিবেদন করেছে। এই সম্পর্কে আরেকটি দৃষ্টান্ত দেওয়া হয়েছে। সাধারণ নাগরিকরা যদিও সরকারের অধীনে কাজ করে, তবুও তারা বুঝতে পারে না কিভাবে সরকার তাদের পরিচালনা করছে। এই প্রসঙ্গে সেটা পাথরাচার্য স্কন্দপুরাণ থেকে অন্যলিখিত শ্লোককে উদ্ধৃত করে দিয়েছেন। যথা রাজ্য প্রিয়তন্ত্র যেমন একটি বৃহৎ প্রতিষ্ঠানের বিভিন্ন কর্মচারীরা যার অধীনে কাজ করছে সেই প্রধান কর্মদ্রব্য দেখতে পায় না, তেমনি বদ্ধজীবীরা তাদের প্রধান বিধান অভ্যন্তরে বিরাজমান তাদের বড় সত্তাকে দেখতে পায় না। তাই আমাদের জড়চক্ষু দ্বারা তাকে না দেখলেও তার প্রতি আমরা আমাদের সশ্রদ্ধ প্রণতি নিবেদন করি।
Once more, just the translation. As the sense objects, form, taste, touch, smell, and sound, cannot understand how the senses perceive them, so the conditioned soul, although residing in this body, along with the super soul, cannot understand how the supreme spiritual person, the master of the material creation, directs his senses. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that supreme person, who is the supreme controller.
Still, we can't see him. And
The example is being given here that sense objects, just like this microphone, don't really have an awareness or a perception that they are being used. I'm looking at the column over there, but the column is not aware that I'm looking at it. And of course that's an obvious statement because the column is not conscious. No, this microphone is conscious. So in one sense this analogy is somewhat derogatory. Because it's saying, and in the same way, we, human, conscious human beings, we're not conscious of that Supreme Lord who's living within our hearts. We are conscious, and yet despite the fact that we have consciousness, something that's so very obvious to someone else living in our body, we're not aware of. If someone just sat in your lap, you'd be very much aware of the fact that he's there, or she's there. Or as in the case of all the mosquitoes that are flying around, as soon as those mosquitoes alight on you, especially when they start to bite, you become very aware that they're there. But now here we have somebody who's living within our hearts, which is about as close as you can get. Even we, the spirit soul, we are situated within the area, the region of the heart. And despite the fact that someone's sitting right beside us, we're not conscious. We're not conscious of his presence, which, according to this analogy, makes us no better than this microphone or that pillar. So Daksha here is therefore offering Namaskaromi. I'm offering my obeisances because by that type of offering, at least I recognize the fact that someone's there who I may not be directly perceiving. Of course, in our culture, which is Gaudiya Vaishnava culture, and actually in the greater Vedic culture, and even in the A-Vedic culture, the concept of seeing is not necessarily considered to be very important. Rather, the process of hearing is considered to be much more to the point. Hearing is the proper way. Vashudevakataruchi is the proper way of really connecting with somebody. But we live in this sort of empiric world where we've been brainwashed with the statement, if I can't see it, I don't believe it. And you could just as readily ask whoever, because when you're preaching, you come across that type of statement often. We've got other senses than just sight. So what's so special about seeing? And as Srila Prabhupada would often say, what can you see? Can you see your eyelids? Can I actually see what this book is made of? It looks like paper. Feels like paper. But it's not paper. It's atoms. Atoms and molecules. I don't see atoms and molecules, I see paper. So if I'm really looking to find out, well, what is this book, then I get one perspective of it, but it's not the real perspective. So why so much emphasis on seeing? What has degraded all the other four senses and their type of perception to some kind of lower status, that all of a sudden hearing is not good? For instance, someone may be around the corner, I can't see them. But if they make a noise by hearing, I get a better idea of where they are. So hearing is also a good source of information. But of course, all types of empiric sensory perception is imperfect in the ultimate sense. But that process of hearing, where transcendental, perfect knowledge comes to the auditory senses, that is the perfect way of knowing about something. So here, Daksha is offering his obeisances to the super soul who he's heard about. And because, for instance, in Western philosophy and in certain branches of Indian philosophy also, the concept of super soul is not accepted, therefore reality and how we perceive it doesn't really get defined properly. This became known in more recent times by a French mathematician whose name was Descartes. As the mind and body problem. Mind and body problem. There were philosophers who conceived of a soul as being distinct from mind. But generally people accept the fact that we've got a body, and aside from that we have a thinking mechanism that we call the mind. And the nature of the two are quite different. One is very gross and one is very subtle. And some branches of philosophers, they will misconstrue that actually the mind is actually spiritual. So even when you have Indian philosophies who accept the existence of the soul, how does a spiritual thing interface with a material thing?
Indian
So here's the body, which is a very gross material thing. And here's the soul, which is, or the mind, which is a spiritual or transcendental, or at least something that's vastly different than this body. So, and this is where thinking, feeling, and willing take place within the soul or the mind. So how does my desire to talk manifest into actual physical action? How does it actually take place? And when you say that there's a connect between the spiritual or the mental and the physical, then how is it that that connection point does not become compromised? Does the spiritual become material, or does the material become spiritual? And then both of them become impure, they lose their nature. So this has become the mind and body problem. What is it that is the intermediary between thinking and willing and the actual action itself? And of course that's not always guaranteed. Because a paralyzed person may want to move, but it doesn't matter how much he wills, he can't do it. A blind person may want to see, but just because he wants to see doesn't necessarily mean that that happens. So ultimately, at least by inference, and of course through the process of oral reception, we learn that there must be someone else there who's the controller of both. Someone who's in touch with the thinking, feeling, willing person, and who also has control over matter. And so here it says, Maha Ishaya, he's the supreme controller. He's not just the Ishaya or the controller, but he's the Maha Ishaya. And that is the super soul. So there has to be someone who's controlling matter, who's also controlling and in touch with spirit, and who is aloof or transcendental. He doesn't become contaminated by touching matter. So in 13th chapter, Krishna says, Upadrishtana mantasya bhakta bhoktra maheshvara paramatme kuchatiyukto. That this is the, he is the supreme permitter. And he's the one who enables. So he's permitting and he's enabling. Or at least the enabling is what takes place first. Prabhupada here writes, the conditioned soul has desires and the supreme soul fulfills it. I have a desire to lift my arm and super soul fulfills that desire. But he's also the permitter. That means that he's not obliged to lift my arm. He's not obliged to move the senses so that my arm actually, my muscles, so that my arm can lift up. And so what determines that someone can lift their arm and someone else can't? And then that will be the karma. So you have your free will. Oh yes, I want to do something. And then the super soul takes that into consideration, and then you see, does this person deserve to lift his arm? And if he deems that it's permissible, then Upadishtana Mantasya, then yes, then he'll permit you to lift
it.
So these are the topics that Arjuna is looking after in the beginning of the 13th chapter. He's asking after six particular topics. He wants to know Prakritim, Purusam, Chaiva, Kshetra, Kshetra, Gameva, Cha, Eta, Vedita, Michani, Gyanam, Gyeyam, Chakeshava. So, in short, Arjuna is asking, he wants to know about Prakriti, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer, the field, and the knower of the field, and of knowledge, and the object of knowledge. Purusha, Prakriti, Prakriti, Purusham, Kshetra, Kshetragya, Gyanam, Gyanam. And then Krishna replies, Idam Sharira Kunteya. This body is called the field. And one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. These become the first two answers that Krishna gives. So we are not the knower, we're aware, we're conscious. We're conscious, at least to a certain extent, we're conscious of what's going on in this body. We feel, we can feel pain, we can hear, our senses function in a certain way. We're not aware of everything. I don't know what my blood pressure is at the present time. I don't know how my other organs are functioning. I'm not aware of everything in the body. I may be catching a cold due to the draft. There's so many other things may be going on that I'm not aware of. But still, I'm considered to be a knower of the body because I know something. But then in the next verse, Krishna immediately qualifies. He says, Kshetra Vyamchatimam Bhidhi Sarva Kshetra Shukharata. He says, but I'm also the knower of the field. And of course, here becomes a real distinction between one knower and the other knower. So Krishna says, Sarva Kshetra. Sarvami, but I know all the fields. I know everybody. And I know everybody in full. So, starting from Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, all down, every living entity, Supreme Lord knows everything that's going on in everybody's body. Interestingly, recently I was just reading how Jiva Goswami explains that the super soul is a different expansion for different personalities. For instance, he says for Lord Shiva, the super soul is Shankarshan. And I think for Lord Brahma, it's either Prajñā or Aniruddha. And for someone else, for Manu and living entities. In any case, he is in the heart of every living entity, and he is Sarvakshetra Shubhavata. He knows what's going on in the heart of every living entity. And Upadishtana Mantashta Vata Bhaktra Maheshwara, as the Maheshwara, as the great controller, same terminology is being used here. He's the person who also facilitates everyone and also gives the permission according to each individual person's karma. And then, you know, in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, there's this fantastic explanation of how through intellectual analysis one can infer the presence of the super soul. And I remember when I was reading that second canto, and that was before I'd even moved into the temple. Before I moved into the temple, I had a lot of time to read. I was reading about 6-8 hours a day. That stopped when I joined the temple. I came in the evening, and the next morning after morning program, I sat down at a desk and I started reading. And the temple president came and said, "Dr. Peter, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm reading." He said, no, it's time to go out and book this. Anyway, what Srila Prabhupada there in the purport, and he gives a very detailed purport of how one can act. I think it's in the sixth chapter.
It's in 2235.
And that how any man, any intelligent man can understand this. What does it say in the ordinary man?
Common man,
any common man. And I read that purport about 50 times. Because I was hoping I wasn't a common man. It was something a little better. But I still couldn't really quite grasp it. It was Srila Prabhupada's conception of what a common man is a little different than our conception of a common man. Krishna Prabhupada would say, "Only child can understand that you're not this body." And then we're a little older than children, and we're still having difficulty coming to grips with this body problem. So there's a need by the process of elimination. The only way that you can explain how it is that our subtle thinking, feeling, and willing translates into action is that there has to be a Maheshwara. There has to be someone else who's in touch with both of these things.
So
And it's not me. It's someone else. And of course, that someone else is someone who is Maheshwar, who is a supreme controller, someone who we should not equate with ourselves. And at this point, of course, the whole issue of are we actually equal to the super soul? And the whole concept of Mayavad philosophy comes in, and Mayavadis often reinterpret the shlokas to say just that. Here's one kshetragya, here's another kshetragya. But when you actually destroy that illusion that distinguishes the two, then you also become the knower of all bodies. But then when he's analyzing these verses, Jiva Goswami points out that it doesn't work in terms of either the logic or the language of Bhagavad Gita. You can't interpret it like that. So in any case, even though we don't see, but still, namaskaromi, we offer our obeisances. And this awareness of the presence of the super soul is very much a sobering phenomenon. And Srila Prabhupada really emphasized a lot on the sort of super soul consciousness, especially in the initial years of his preaching. Although, of course, it's there everywhere throughout his books. And of course, one important thing to take from that is that wherever we go, we may be ignorant of the super soul's presence, but he's not. He's aware of what we're doing. And of course, this analogy of the two birds within the tree of the body. Why are we unaware of super soul? Because we've turned away from it. You turn away from someone, then it's almost as if they don't exist. So he sees what we're doing, he knows what we're thinking, he knows what our misbehavior is. We're not getting away with anything. So at least that's one lesson that we can take amongst many from this verse. Is that even though we may not be aware of the presence of the super soul, he's there. And he really knows what's going on. So when we come in front of Radha Madhav, then we're on our best behavior. But if we're in that consciousness that wherever we go, Radha Madhav is actually within our hearts. And is witnessing everything, then we'll continue to be in our best behavior. No room for misbehavior. And when we misbehave, then he will actually have the right, and he will take away some permission. He will not necessarily allow us to relish all of the things that we can or we should be from the practice of our devotional activities. In the same way that he can also take away or measure out what we deserve in terms of our karma, and either he can make us be acrobats or he can turn us into cripples. Hare Krishna, that's it for time. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Madhav ki jai. Jai Jai Gopi Vrindavan.